Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're back in the Billy Meier case, of course. Edward Albert Meier is a one-armed farmer from Switzerland. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidt-Ruti, which is about 52 minutes east of Zurich by automobile. He grew up in northern Switzerland, in an area called Bulak during World War II. And during the end of World War II there, he could watch the bombers and the fighter planes fly over, occasionally seeing one of the Swiss Air Force shoot down an American bomber. Occasionally also he would get to watch the German planes as they flew over. Billy also saw some extraterrestrial craft as a young boy. One particular case that's particularly interesting, he saw a very large disc hover over the church steeple, where his father saw this as well, and it's a very interesting sighting. Billy would also occasionally see these what look like stars moving very high in the sky in the evenings, and he later realized that these were also extraterrestrial craft. Billy had a very unusual time growing up. He nearly died at 6 months old from a horrible pneumonia. In fact, he would have died if it hadn't been for his extraterrestrial mentor, Svath, who stepped in and saved him. When Billy was about 4 years old, he had a tremendous epiphany one evening. He crawled out a lower window in his bedroom and looked up at a beautiful starry sky, and he noticed his own voice saying some very strange and profound things like, "My life exists because of the love of creation," or, "Since ancient times, I've lived among the stars." And he had a deep insight at a very young age to the nature of the universe and to creation. And he also said tremendous things like, "The infinite love of creation connects all life, because in all life that love lies hidden." When he was about 5 years old, he started to get these telepathic messages from this elderly man of about 1,000 years old, who I've talked about, called Svath, who eventually landed his silvery pear-shaped craft there in northern Switzerland. Young Edward came over to the craft, and Billy was brought inside, and Svath took him up into high Earth orbit, started to explain to the young boy about his mission on the earth as a teacher, and that he would teach a very ancient teaching that he's taught in previous lives on the earth and on other worlds, dating back for millions and millions of years. In fact, Svath's people, the Plearen, have a very, very advanced technology, and they have the ability to track spirit forms. And they know that the spirit form of this young boy in Switzerland, who was having these experiences right around 1945, they knew his spirit form was from one of their ancient teachers that they refer to as Nokodemian. So they're tracking their own teacher incarnating on the earth. And what's also very, very interesting is all the extraterrestrials involved in this case, many of them, not all of them, but about four or five of the key players, are related genetically. For example, Svath is Ptah's father. Ptah is Semyase's father. And I think Quetzal is a cousin. I'm guessing a little bit there. But this is also kind of a genetic relationship, because all of the people that I've mentioned are also genetically related to this individual, Nokodemian, this very, very ancient teacher that Billy's spirit form has incarnated as on other worlds. So it's understandable that some people study this case or look at this case and have a hard time wrapping their minds around it, and they avoid it, I think, for that reason. And it's much easier in many cases to assume something is false rather than take the responsibility of doing the investigation and to make to the point of making an unbiased decision, to make a fair decision. When you've got 40 books to read and about 700 contact notes and maybe 1,000 bulletins, you could probably read as well. So there's a lot of information here. It's certainly very, very profound. The books include some of them, The Might of Thoughts, The Psyche, The Way to Live, The Goblet of Truth. In any one of those books, you could probably study for the rest of your life to truly appreciate all the information that's contained in them. And the reason there's so much dense information in there is because of the age of the spiritual consciousness of this very, very young boy who I'm telling you about, who grew up in Switzerland during the time of World War II. His spirit form is 9.6 billion years old. It's older than our Earth, and it's been a teacher in numerous lifetimes before. So it's incarnating again here on the Earth, and I think this is the final incarnation. It's the seventh incarnation. The spirit has lived material lives as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad, and now Edward Albert Meyer. Most of the prophets that I just mentioned were known by different names during their lifetime, and that in itself could be a whole study. The other thing that's really important to take a look at is and reinvestigate this a little bit, is looking into what is a spirit form. We all have a spirit form. It's the spiritual consciousness that we carry with us from the time of our birth. The spirit form comes in at 21 days and enlivens the whole body. And it causes every cell to have life, causes the heart to beat. It brings with it, in its subconsciousness, the essence of the wisdom, the accumulated wisdom of all the previous personalities. And that's the way the evolution of the consciousness works. So it's that your spirit form contains the wisdom of those accumulated lifetimes, but also in your subconscious, the essence of all those lifetimes is there, and you will be impulsed by the wisdom of your previous personalities. So, and the reason we live many material lifetimes is to gather the wisdom and experience of those lifetimes. Every lifetime, we get a new personality. So we're starting from scratch each time. There's no karma from previous lifetimes. So you're not handicapped by those previous mistakes. You also look at things from a new perspective. When your spirit form reincarnates again, you'll have a new personality, so you won't get stuck in the old habits of previous personalities. One of the difficulties that we have right now is related to overpopulation. And typically a spirit form will spend, for example, if you lived 100 years in a physical life, you'll spend about 150 years in the spiritual realm, ideally. That's the way things work normally. But in a time of very high population, you might only get 10, 20, 30, 40 years in the spiritual realm. So I would imagine it's possible then that even the wisdom that you had from previous lifetimes wouldn't be completely processed, that you may not even bring all those essences to your new lifetime, and they wouldn't be in your subconscious. That's a bit of speculation on my part. But there are some things that are certainly known that the lack of time in the spiritual realm causes. Maleness isn't completely pronounced then. Also, you'll have an overdependence on parents. And that all comes from the overpopulation problem. I think right now it's about 192 billion spirit forms have been activated now in the spiritual realm. So because of overpopulation, things are very out of balance, both in the material and in the spiritual. And the overpopulation is the biggest issue we face here on the earth. And as I've said before, people incorrectly assume that you can determine how many people can exist in a healthy manner on a planet just by using surface area to calculate what is the correct amount of people to have. That's not the case at all, because all the area on the earth isn't habitable easily, for one thing. Just take for example 6 million square miles in the southern polar region. You know, people aren't going to intentionally live there. Probably even under the worst overpopulation, I don't think people would live there. The other thing is, we need these giant forests, which are getting smaller and smaller all the time. These forests, they mitigate, they moderate the weather. They absorb tremendous amounts of rain and flooding. That's why we're seeing so many floods now. Part of the reason is because of the destruction of all the plants associated with these forests. They also keep the forests keep the ground much, much cooler. If you ever go into a forest in the middle of summer, you'll be astonished. It's 20 degrees cooler in a dense forest, which is wonderful for the animals, but it stops those giant storms from forming, because when cool air hits the hot air coming off of these flat barren places, like, and that's why we get the giant tornadoes in the Midwest. It's the same kind of thing. The soil gets extremely hot because the forests aren't there anymore. And that hot air associated with the hot ground collides with the cool air, and then we get the twisters that form and the tremendous tornadoes and the hurricanes and that sort of thing. You see, it takes thousands of years, maybe tens of thousands of years, to develop these forests to the way they should be. And then mankind comes through in a very, very short time and destroys the forests. The other thing is people are going to congregate in areas where there's fresh water. And that also is a limited area. And people are also going to have to congregate in areas where there is arable land that can produce crops. The other thing that you have to take into consideration with population is the industry that it takes to support a certain lifestyle. For example, just look in your home, your computer, your printer, your light fixtures, your stove, your microwave, your garage doors, your washer, your dryer, your television. I could go on and on and on. All of these are built in factories that require tremendous amounts of land, and they have to, you know, it just goes on and on and on. So don't be fooled by people that say you could fit everybody in the world in the area of Texas. That would, believe me, that may solve our problems if we ever tried to do that, because that's going to cause a lot of people to die. And because we don't understand how the creation works, we don't understand our relationship to the planet. We don't understand that not only do these giant forests have to be here, but all the plants, all the animals, all the insects, all this life plays an important role in maintaining this balance that we've upset horribly because of the 9 billion people that we have on the planet. And if you could reduce that population, it would take away the problems of air pollution, water pollution, the pollution from radiation. There would be no reason to build these gigantic radioactive plants, these uranium storehouses, these disasters waiting to happen, all these nuclear power plants. And we've seen what has happened with Fukushima. We should have a population on this planet more like 530 million to about a billion. We need to step back to about the 1300s in terms of our population. And that would solve so many problems in the world. But people, they just don't understand. And I didn't understand. I bought into the whole thing about the area of the earth, and all we need to do is spread out and all of our problems would be solved. Well, you have, you know, countries like Bangladesh with 146 million people crammed in to an area the size of Iowa. And that is a perfect example of the reality of overpopulation. So overpopulation is one of the most difficult things that we have to face here on the earth. And if we could wrap our mind around what we're doing to ourselves, we would certainly try to address this issue, which unfortunately we're not. I'm going to play a clip here, and hopefully this clip will sound okay. I've been having trouble with clips. Blog Talk is having big problems this evening, by the way. I just thought I'd let you know. Here's a little bit about Bangladesh and slum dwellers trying to get enough water.
Next, today is World Water Day. Tonight, we look at an innovative approach to getting clean water to slum dwellers in so-called megacities. Our story is another in our occasional reports about population issues around the globe. It's part of a collaboration with National Geographic Magazine and the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting and comes from special correspondent Steve Sapienza in Bangladesh.
Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, is one of the world's fastest growing cities and one of the poorest. As in many other developing countries, people are leaving the countryside in search of work and a better life in the city. Dhaka's population, now estimated at 15 million, is expected to hit 20 million by 2025.
Dhaka is one of the mega cities which is growing too fast.
Country director for the charity WaterAid, Dr. Khairul Islam, says the increased population density is severely taxing the city's ability to house and care for its people.
Almost 5,000 slums are in and around Dhaka city, and almost one-third of the population are living in either low-income communities and slum areas. Most of them don't have ownership over those pieces of land that they're residing. But the main challenge is provisioning essential services for this huge number of population, mainly water and sanitation.
With 2,000 newcomers daily, the struggle to find clean water in the slums often has life-threatening consequences.
Water? Yes, we have water, but the water is not always available. When water is available, it is often bad. Yesterday, a woman here thought she had cholera. She went to the hospital, but she died last night.
If you want to see the human toll exacted by unsafe water and poor sanitation in Dhaka, you come here. This is the overflow tent at the short stay unit at Dhaka's main cholera and diarrhea hospital.
This man arrived at the hospital with no vital signs. After 15 minutes of trying to revive him, his wife is given the news. The staff records cholera as the cause of death. The hospital's lead research scientist, Dr. S.K. Roy, and his colleagues work around the clock 365 days a year to save lives threatened by waterborne illness. The majority of the patients here are the urban poor, and the hospital care is free.
We are now having about 400 patients every day. But in August, September, sometime we go up to 1,200 a day. And I can tell you the average of a year is 120,000 patient average in a year. So this hospital is a quite busy one. Most of them having E. coli diarrhea, cholera diarrhea. Then we are having a typhoid patient, quite high number. So these are coming through water and hand behavior, hand contamination.
Most diarrhea patients are released within 12 to 24 hours of receiving treatment. But at a nearby clinic, two newcomers to Dhaka have been battling the illness for 5 days. Fazila Begum believes her baby, Saim, became ill after drinking water from a shared well. When the baby is finally cleared to leave, the attending doctor warns Fazila that Saim is in precarious shape and needs safe drinking water, regular meals, and rest. Fazila rents a small room at a nearby slum for $20 a month. She shares cooking, water, and toilet facilities with 25 neighbors. Neighbors say the shared well provided by the landlord is not deep enough to avoid contamination. Many here complain of frequent dysentery, and the evidence, small packs of saline rehydration solution, is everywhere. Fazila knows the conditions are unsafe, but she already pays more than she can afford to live here.
I know it's not a good situation, but what am I supposed to do?
The job of supplying safe water to residents belongs to the Dhaka Water and Sewage Authority, DWASA for short. Residents need city approval before they can extract water or connect to city water pipes. But approval to use city water is only given to residents who can provide proof of land ownership. This leaves 4 million slum dwellers without legal access to city water. With few options, they end up paying high prices for suspect water supplied by slumlords, or they buy costly bottled water from the roving carts of water sharks. Still others tap illegally into city water.
So these are the difficulties that are facing people in the world, all over the world today. Lack of drinking water, lack of clean water. You hear the stories here, the people dying from cholera and dysentery and all horrible forms of diarrhea. See, we don't understand these things that are happening around the world and why they are happening. And you can see the beginning of the overpopulation ramping up here in the United States too. And as we get more and more immigration, you can see the massive columns of traffic as they flow into the cities every morning. So these are very real problems. Billy had prophecies back in 1958 when he was only 16 years old, I believe, about 16, 18 years old, when he first started writing about the difficulties that we would be facing from the overpopulation issue. So it's good to take the information in the case very seriously. In fact, it's really a matter of survival for the people of the earth. We don't yet understand the predicament we are in, because one of the things about overpopulation is that populations start to grow exponentially after a while. And I have another clip here that talks about the exponential growth of population.
You know, there are a lot of things that we can fix in this world. We can do something about it. We can design the cities that we live in, the kinds of houses we live in, the market, the economy, currency, how many trees we're going to cut, how many fish we're going to catch. Those things human beings can manage and control because we create them and do them. But some things are facts of life we have to live with. The speed of light, gravity, entropy, the first and second laws of thermodynamics. Those are things that we have to accept and work ourselves around. And there is another one that is absolutely crucial. It's a mathematical reality called exponential growth. If something is growing at 1% a year, it'll double in 70 years. 2% a year, it'll double in 35 years. 3% a year in 24 years. 4%, 17 and a half years. Anything growing exponentially will double in a predictable length of time. Now, I'm going to show you why all of this stuff about we got to keep growing, keep the economy growing, we've got to keep everything growing, is ultimately suicidal. I'm going to give you a system analogous to the planet, and that's a test tube full of food for bacteria. So the test tube and food is the planet, and the bacteria are us. Now, I'm going to introduce one bacterial cell in, and it's going to divide every minute. That's exponential growth. So at time zero, at the beginning, there's one cell. 1 minute, there are two. 2 minutes, there are four. 3 minutes, there are eight. 4 minutes, 16. That's exponential growth. And at 60 minutes, the test tube is completely packed with bacteria and there's no food left. So we have a 60-minute growth cycle. When is the test tube only half full? Well, of course, the answer is at 59 minutes. Even though it's been chugging along for 59 minutes, it's only half full, but 1 minute later, it'll be completely filled. So that means at 58 minutes, it's 25% full. 57 minutes, it's 12.5% full. At 55 minutes of a 60-minute cycle, it's 3% full. At 55 minutes, one of the bacteria says, "Hey, guys, I've been thinking, we got a problem. We got a population problem." The other bacteria would say, "Jack, what the hell have you been smoking, man? 97% of the test tube's empty, and we've been around for 55 minutes. And they'd be 5 minutes away from filling it. So, say bacteria are no smarter than humans. At 59 minutes, they go, "Oh my God, Jack was right. We got 1 minute left. What are we going to do?" Well, don't give any money to those economists that are saying we got to keep growing all the time. Give it to those scientists. So they massively inject money into the scientific community. And guess what? In less than a minute, those bacterial scientists invent three new test tubes full of food. That'd be like us finding three more planets that we could use. What happens? At 60 minutes, the first test tube's full. 61 minutes, the second's full. 62 minutes, all four are full. By quadrupling the amount of food in space, we buy two extra minutes. Our home is the biosphere. It's fixed and finite. It can't grow. And we've got to learn to live within that finite world. Every scientist I've talked to agrees with me. We've already passed the 59th minute.
Well, folks, there you hear it, exponential growth. Many scientists believe that we're already at the 59th minute, which is a very scary thought indeed. I think the next big step in population, people are gonna wake up and see, wow, you know, we made a we've made a big mistake here. We've allowed this problem to really, really get out of control. So we have a lot of difficult issues on the earth, you know. When Billy was a very young boy and he was being schooled by Svoth, Svoth would take him up in his ship and start to tell him things like we have just been studying about the issue of population. One thing about the Pleiaren, they have seen worlds destroy themselves with overpopulation before. In the contact reports, there's a story of a planet called Akart, A-K-A-R-T, which is actually was, it's no longer populated, was extremely populated, I think with over 100 billion people. Finally, they got to a point where there was some kind of catastrophic thing occurred with the atmosphere. The Pleiaren were only able to get a small amount of people off, you know, several million, something like that, and the rest perished. Now, it's interesting, though. Spirit forms have a way to move through space, and they will search out the next planet that is at a similar point in evolution, and they will start then reincarnating on that planet. Now, we've had another planet that was destroyed in our solar system completely, named Melona. The people that were on that world, they took an ocean and diverted it into a volcano, which caused a tremendous explosion, which destroyed their world. The debris associated with that explosion wiped out many of the people. There were actually people on Mars in our ancient past. I'm talking a couple hundred thousand, 300,000 plus years ago. Eventually, Mars was completely torn out of its orbit by something called the Destroyer Comet. The Meyer material explains that there was a very large comet which would come through our solar system on a regular basis. And that's where we get a lot of our legends about Planet X, which Meyer information says really isn't true, but there was a giant comet that used to come through our solar system and cause great disasters on the Earth. In fact, one time it came through, it pulled with it several other comets. And there was a man on the Earth, a prince, who was a bit of a seer. He had the ability to see into the future, and he saw this event that would happen 300 years later. Now, his father was a very advanced king, and he believed what his son was saying. So what they did was they took the Great Pyramid, they covered it with lime, and they got as many people as they could into the old cubicle constructions that were far below the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid, according to Meyer information, is about 73,000 years old. And one of the things it was used for was a place for people to hide during these great disasters, which occurred in ancient times. One of the other things that the Great Destroyer Comet did, I think this only happened, according to Meyer information, about 3,500 years ago. It pulled in the planet Venus. And that was another great disaster that occurred on the Earth because this caused giant volcanoes, and the gravity of Venus coming through close by caused tremendous upheavals on the Earth. So we've had very, very great disasters in our solar system, and we've had civilizations that have risen and fallen and risen and fallen. I was talking last night about the civilization of Pelagon, which was, and Pelagon was a man who came from the Pleiaren star system. He brought thousands of people with him. I think he actually stole a large spacecraft. At that time, the Pleiaren still had wars, and he brought with him this large group of people who were trying to escape from the great wars, the next great war that was happening in the Pleiaren star system. You know, the Pleiaren are descended from the Lyrians, and the Lyrians were very warlike people, even though they had high technologies and had great abilities in their material consciousness. Now, after Pelagon, Pelagon was a great king of wisdom. He was an Ishwish. After he died, his civilization crumbled, and there was a great world war, a tremendous world war that caused great damage to the ecosystem of Earth. And for about 700 years, the Earth was simply avoided by a lot of extraterrestrials. Then the descendants of the refugees from Beta Centauri set out to once again settle the beautiful blue world of the Earth. We've had extraterrestrial civilizations here from the Pleiaren star system, which is about 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. It's about 500 light years total. We've had people that came here from Beta Centauri. Beta Centauri is over 300 light years from the Earth, 390, something like that. These people came here about 133,000 years ago. The two leaders, the one was Atlant, who was a king of wisdom, and a woman named Caryatide, who they built a great island continent, a city on an island continent that existed between South America and Europe, in roughly that area. And one of the things, you know, Billy, there's a new translation out at au.figu.org, I think, which is Australia Figu, that talks a little bit about this. So I'll read a few passages here from that as well. One thing Billy did in this, and this was in the 55th contact, on my website I have the 59th contact, which also talks about Atlantis and Lemuria. It says here, Semyasi says, that Atlantis was divided into two empires. Greater Atlantis was located between the split of continents of America, South America, and Europe and Africa, while Lesser Atlantis was located in the area of Santorini that they talk about. Now, Greater Atlantis was destroyed through these feuds with the citizens of Mu. Now, Mu was located in the area that we today call the Gobi Desert. There were two underground cities underneath Mu, Agartha Alpha and Agartha Beta. They were connected by underground tunnels. Atlantis sank into the ocean because of this great war, but Mu was also eliminated and ceased to exist. Only the subterranean of city of Agartha was left. Now, there was also a greater Atlantis, which was the city between, it was the city in the island continent between Europe and America, or also South America and Africa, right in the middle there. That was Greater Atlantis. And Lesser Atlantis was located in this area near Santorini. Now, Lesser Atlantis was destroyed around 6,000 years later, indirectly by that gigantic destroyer comet I was talking about. It dragged Venus into the solar system about 3,500 years ago. And there were tremendous tremors when the destroyer came racing past the Earth with Venus in its wake, and serious damage was done to the Earth. There were tremendous volcanoes. There were various islands were pulled into the sea when this Schreyer comet came past. The sea bubbled. Because of this, there was a tsunami wave of about 2,000 meters high was created that rolled over the island of Crete in Greece and went right up to Egypt and Syria. And in those days, Crete was still called Minoa, and its citizens were descendants of Atlantis. So we've had tremendous disasters in the past on Earth, disasters that we're only just beginning to understand. Let me digress a little bit here and go off topic. You know, I started with overpopulation and then somehow sank into the ancient civilization situation a little bit and talked a little bit about some of the disasters that have happened. I guess the disasters are related to the disaster of overpopulation. But in this new translation about Atlantis and Mu, they also talk about our government. And I want to talk a little bit about our government and read a little bit about what our government is doing. Billy says, "And you don't seem to understand, between us, the questions are dealt with logically. However, for the Earth human beings, this is not always comprehensible, because they simply do not know certain things. So to them, it is largely also unknown that the American government simply is a national government, while the American Pentagon embodies the Ministry of Defense and War. Therefore, concerning this matter, you should give an explanation." So Semyase starts to explain how our government really is working. She says, "In America, America is being governed unofficially by various forms of government. On the one hand, the presidential government governs. However, also the Pentagon, as well as the military and also the CIA, plays a role in the government. Officially, all three really belong together. However, in truth, all three forms, in their innermost, work only for themselves alone. So in a manner of speaking, they make up their own form of government. So our official government's doing one thing. Our Pentagon is doing another. The CIA, again, is doing something else. So there's very much strangeness going on here in the United States." Semyase continues, "If, therefore, your questions are related to the official government on the one hand and the Pentagon on the other hand, then accordingly I have to give you also two different answers in relation to this, namely, that one of these governments is in possession of certain materials and so forth of extraterrestrial origin, while it is not known to us that the Pentagon is supposed to be in possession of a few dead bodies of extraterrestrial intelligences." This is Semyase speaking. Let me continue. "The possibility may indeed well exist. However, we have no knowledge about whether it is actually so. In the meantime, we have made an effort to clarify this question. However, we were not able to reach clear results." Billy continues, "I think that this explanation would be sufficient. Now, however, I would like to sound you out thoroughly in regard to Atlantis and Mu. You have promised me already more than a year ago that you would give me enough information about it. And in the meantime, concerning this question, you've probably made a few remarks and you've not given exhaustive information about it." So Semyase and Billy are continuing this conversation. And Semyase talks about 150,000 years ago, that there were wars and uprisings on their home planet. And I was talking about that. And I mentioned a scientist called Pelagon, who made himself a leader of a group of about 70,000 human beings. And with his help, they had appropriated numerous large spaceships and they fled the Pleiaden system. And they came to Earth here in a frantic escape through space and time. There was about 70,000 of them. And they came on these stolen spaceships with 200 very good scientists in varied fields of knowledge. And it's interesting, but they use the term God or King of Wisdom to refer to Pelagon. And his descendants and the people, they build up a very high culture on Earth that flourished for a couple thousand years. They built large cities. They inhabited all the continents of Earth. And I think the whole civilization lasted about 10,000 years. However, before the 10,000 years was completed, there was a great dissatisfaction which erupted again through the lust for the might of some and the greed for power, which led to these entire, these tremendous wars. And it's said here that an Earth World War took place to the extent that has never happened before and has never happened since. And there was only a few thousand human beings who survived this war. And it says here, everything but really completely everything that the ones who had come from space had built up was destroyed and annihilated. And only a few thousand human beings of these extraterrestrials survived the tremendous catastrophe. And some fled into space and settled on foreign worlds. And a very small remnant remained on what the Meyer information refers to as the destroyed Earth. And these people that remain degenerated completely, and a small group of Earthborn humans at that time lived. So we're talking about Pelagon and that civilization and how that civilization was completely destroyed. Now, I often read from Contact Report 70 that says 700 years the Earth was simply avoided. Well, in this corrected translation from Figu, it says, when after about 7,000 years, the distant descendants of the ones that fled came back to the Earth, and therefore they found only extremely wild and degenerated individuals of their forefathers who lived, as said before, far away from the Earth human beings. Now, can you imagine living these lifetimes, these very, very advanced lifetimes, in a very, very advanced society? And then this great disaster occurs, and you die, and you spend a certain time in the spiritual realm, and your spirit form reincarnates, and in your subconscious is the memory of these higher civilizations. But you're living now in a very primitive society of degenerated, very wild individuals. Can you imagine the trauma that must be associated with that? In any case, people came here from Beta Centauri. Beta Centauri is about 390 light years from the Earth. And it's interesting that if you look in the Arabic, that the name for Beta Centauri is Hagar or Hadar. And it has the meaning in that ancient language of to settle upon, to be on the ground, civilization. So to me, that's a very strong indication that what the Meyer material is saying is true, that these people would name a star civilization or have a synonym to mean on the ground, indicates that something strange definitely happened on the Earth. Another meaning for in Arabic of Beta Centauri is the word Agena, I believe. I'll have to look at my notes again, which means to kneel, because I think some of these people who came here later were not so evolved in terms of their spiritual lives. And one of those individuals was a man named Aris the Barbarian. Aris the Barbarian, he conquered Hyperborea, which was the area, the beautiful area in the north that had the perfect weather. Believe it or not, our North Pole, for some reason, had a tremendously wonderful climate. Aris the Barbarian and his people conquered that, which is called Hyperborea. The Hyperboreans eventually fled, and they went into Mount Shasta, where they lived, I think, until about 1995. The Hyperboreans are a blonde people. They had been on the Earth about 180,000 years, and sometimes you could see their spherical spacecraft coming out of one of the sides of Mount Mammoth. Mount Shasta, I believe, is another one. They also had bases in some of the Aleutian Islands near Alaska. The Hyperboreans are very interesting people because they also had interactions with the person that we call Noah, or the Maya material refers to this individual as Noah Codnesser, who was extremely tall, by the way. He was over 10 feet tall, so you can imagine someone's head at the rim of the basketball court. And the Maya material says that the flood that we think of, the biblical flood, occurred about 100,000 years ago. So much, much more ancient than we think here on the Earth. Again, after the War of Atlantis and Lemuria, there was a great pole shift, and the area of the north, which is where Florida was, moved down to where Florida is now. And the Earth went through another great trauma. And what we have are these repeating disasters in our solar system. We have the destruction of Melona. We have the movement of Mars out of its rightful orbit, which caused that whole civilization to pass away. We have the gigantic war in the time of Pelagon, which basically destroyed the whole Earth practically. It took 7,000 years for people to come back to try to settle again. And then what happens there? After that great war, there's a pole shift. There's an asteroid that's brought into the Earth, slams into the Earth as a weapon, causes a pole shift, almost destroys the Earth, almost destroys the entire civilization on the Earth. And the people that are here, they degenerate. They degenerate back into a more primitive time of living. What happens after that? The destroyer comet comes through, and it brings with it Venus, which causes a tremendous disaster again on the Earth. So what we've had for eons are these gigantic disasters. The repeating disaster occurs again and again and again and again. And we're coming up again on another one of these disasters, and it's the disaster of overpopulation. And in the next 800 years, hopefully, if the Meyer material continues to be taught, and people start to pay attention, we can curb the coming disaster that's coming from overpopulation. Population must be reduced and scaled to the planet. Population doesn't have to be, population control does not have to be barbaric. We must start to think about this in a logical manner. Nature keeps its population in balance. However, man, we can act contrary to natural law. And that's what's happening. We've allowed our populations to be out of control. There are 4 million people who are born on the street and die on the street in India every year. 18 million people starve to death every year in the world. There are 9,000 newborns per hour over the number of deaths. Again, I was playing that clip earlier. Bangladesh, the country the size of Iowa, has a population of 167 million people. That's more people than live in Russia. 10 million children die every year from starvation-related diseases. But yet the world population continues to grow by 77 million people annually. So we're already in the exponential growth curve of population, which was talked about in that clip that we heard from the scientist Suzuki. His name is Suzuki. And that's the thing. We're in such a rate of growth now, and we're in a point on the curve where the population explodes. The United States is the third fastest growing country in the world because of immigration. And we will add 100 million people to the United States by 2035 because of immigration. And Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and California no longer possess enough water for their residents. And we have a coming global water crisis. And one of these aquifers that's being depleted is called the Ogallala Aquifer. And it's a shallow water aquifer. It's located in the Great Plains. And it's been depleted to a tremendous level. It'll take 6,000 years for that aquifer to replenish naturally through rainfall. States like Colorado have lost 1.65 million acres of farmland. Now, this is how insane we are. We're getting rid of the farmland and putting houses on there and creating an even bigger need for farmland. It's insane what we're doing. It's just so strange. And if you don't believe in overpopulation, then look at the traffic jams. Look at the traffic jams. There's a famous traffic jam in China that occurred in 2010 called the Chinese National Highway Traffic Jam, a traffic jam that lasted 10 days. And some people were only able to move their cars about a half a mile per day. And there's another gigantic traffic jam that occurred in São Paulo, Brazil. 182 miles of traffic jam. Look at the traffic jams that we have all over this world. And we're seeing large dead zones appearing in our oceans because of the tremendous pollution that is going into the rivers around the world. Do you know how many children are dying in some of these third world countries, like in Africa? 6 out of 8 children that are born die because of starvation and starvation-related diseases. Anyway, folks, I hope you've enjoyed the show. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a good week.